The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, oh boy, we go all in the ketogenic diet. Before we do that, by the way, we do our 12-minute fun conversation. So if you want to hear all about the ketogenic diet, you can fast forward that first 12 minutes. But in that 12 minutes, we talk about music and workouts. Then I talk about a study and that talks about why we crave sweets when we are stressed out. And then the rest of the episode is all about
that keto,
the ketogenic diet. But really, it's about why we think the ketogenic diet is probably making people fatter rather than helping people lose weight in a long-term, permanent fashion. You know, it's been popular now for at least a few years. We've been witnessing some interesting trends. And of course, we talk about our experiences with the ketogenic diet and our clients' experiences with the ketogenic diet and why we think the vast majority of you listening right now should not be on a long-term ketogenic diet. So I know this episode will be a little controversial for some people, but again, we have a lot of experience working with people and I think we made a pretty good case. So listen in and enjoy. But before we get started, I want to remind everybody, MAPS Aesthetic, our bodybuilding physique competitor, bikini competitor program, the program that is designed for people who want to change how they look to become more aesthetic. They want to sculpt their body the way they see fit. That program right there, very popular, 50% off. All you got to do is go to mapsfitnessproducts.com, use the code BLACK50, BLACK50, and you will get 50% off. On that site, we have other MAPS programs as well. So if you want to find one that suits your personal fitness experience, fitness needs, and goals, again, go on that site, mapsfitnessproducts.com.
We got you.
You know what was a good workout band that nobody ever brings up anymore today because they kind of fell out of favor?
Disturbed?
No, they were great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Down with the sickness.
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
But you laugh because now it's kind of like, Limp
Bizkit. Yeah.
But they were legit workout music back then.
But yeah, no, I mean, the energy they had. I watched them. I actually went to one of their concerts.
I watched them get booed off stage.
It was explosive. Like everybody went crazy and was like fighting each other.
So you went when they were cool.
Yeah, when they were cool.
And then you went when
they were just like right after. Done.
What was it that he did? Fred Durst did.
Because that was a rise and fall.
He incited a riot at this revised Woodstock where they had Woodstock with Korn and Limp Bizkit and Rage Against the Machine and like all these like metal rap bands. Like what?
And alcohol.
That's not Woodstock.
It turned into a bloodbath.
So somebody had tore something down, and so what he did was he like started, he got them to like grab one of these pieces of wood, and he got on it and was surfing on it, and so now at that. Everybody started like tearing stuff down because they saw him like surfing on this piece of wood, and then it just exploded. Everybody started like rioting and like raping people and crazy shit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's right. I read about that.
It was horrific.
I couldn't remember why we all of a sudden went from liking him to hating him. I remember I had tickets to go see. So this was, they were in San Francisco. I watched Mudvayne, Limp Bizkit, Metallica, and Linkin Park were all at a concert. So they were on a tour together. Great, great concert. But when Limp Bizkit came out, he didn't even finish his set because people were throwing shit on the stage and booing him off. I think he sang two songs.
That's rough.
So now are you sure that's why he got a lot of hate? Because I thought it was because he was dating every pop star in the world.
I'm sure that contributed to part of it, but that was the nail in the coffin for him.
Really?
Yeah. 100%.
Because there was, at one point, Durst was the man. He was dating every hot you know, pop star, actress. Like, he was the guy.
Yeah.
And then he went from cool to not cool at
cool
all.
Cool to drool.
Yeah, like, yeah. You didn't want to say you were a Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, no, I couldn't remember.
I know, I still like their music, though. That's
hell yeah.
Thing, yeah.
Hell yeah.
No, it's great workout music. It's on my playlist.
Is
yeah.
it still?
Yeah, yeah, it's on my playlist. Dude. I still listen to that.
Break stuff. Yeah.
It's so good. Song. I mean, Rage Against the Machine is always my go-to, but I can abuse that too much to the point where it loses its effect, so I try to fast from it for like a while.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I know, you know, I
fast with it with Pantera.
Yes. Here's what I notice with music. It's like caffeine for me. Yeah. Like, if I use caffeine too frequently, I need more and more of it to give me the same effect.
Totally.
So I'll start off with like Linkin Park, and then it'll get to like Disturbed, and then Rage Against the Machine. But before I know it, I'm like Sepultura, Lamb of God.
Yeah.
And then it's just,
dude, 100%. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Our bodies are adaptation machines.
Isn't that funny?
It for sure works the same way. This is why I'm actually very methodical about my music. As when I'm kind of getting into my rhythm, I'm not listening to my heavy metal right now. Right now, I'm like hip hop. Like, you know, if I'm listening to, like, when you guys hear hip hop out here, like, you know, like, oh, he's not that serious right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not getting after it yet. Like, because I'm not there. Like, I'm not scaling the workouts there. But once I start scaling the workouts up, and the volume starts increasing and the intensity starts increasing, so does my music.
Is that where you start hip hop? Is that your first?
Yeah, because hip hop, like, hip hop,
skinny groove or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like it is. It's more of a groove. You know,
that was always my party music. You know, if I ever had people over, it's always hip hop.
Well, you dance really well to it.
Yeah, man.
I've seen you do a couple moves. It's not bad.
That's what it's for.
I start out with like house, high energy electronic music, which is good cardio music, but not really for weights. But I start out with that. So I'll work out to. Mm. But at the end, man, I end up
That's very Lane-esque.
What? No. Yes. He listens to dramatic movie music.
The pinnacle
is
Enya.
Oh, my gosh. Was there ever a song that was like, was there ever a group or a song that was for sure, like, if you listen to it, you're going to either hurt yourself or you're going to hit new PRs? Was there anything that falls in that category for you?
Rage.
Yes.
Yeah, Rage.
Is it always Rage?
Yeah, Rage is like that.
Which
sure.
song?
Ooh, Killing in the Name of.
Oh, that one?
Oh, that was a great one.
Yeah.
I like Freedom, but.
Fuck.
Yeah, Freedom
yes.
with. Freedom! Yeah. I'm like, I
fuck
lose my
you,
shit.
I won't do what you tell me.
That one, too.
Yeah. I liked Wake Up because of the buildup. And then it's like, you know, wake. It's the song to The Matrix.
Yeah.
Remember at the end of The Matrix?
Yeah.
But that's not my. That wasn't my ultimate. My ultimate ever.
Is Rocky.
The soundtrack to Rocky IV. That. Dude,
that's so funny.
I'm gonna tell you something right now. I will never play that music unless it's a special
You're
occasion.
You're just gonna hurt yourself.
It has to be a special occasion because when I put it on,
throw your back out,
dude. It's something else. So I was showing my son, and we were listening to the music in the car, and he's like, "Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, it sounds pretty cool." But and I mean, he wasn't getting it. And I'm like, "Oh, I know why. You haven't seen the scenes that this movie goes to." So then I'm showing him the scenes of, you know, Rocky training in the snow.
All the drama that's tied into
that. And he was getting all like pumped. Dude, you know what cracked me up? Enzo. I was talking about this with Enzo about music that pumps us up. So Enzo's like, "Dude, check out this song. It's freaking rad." He sends me this remix song with Dragon Ball in it.
What?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Like Dragon Ball Z?
Dragon Ball Z. And the dude is he's powering up. I'm getting my power. And then it turns into a song. And I'm like, of course, dude. You grew up with that shit.
Totally different thing.
That's his Rocky IV. Yeah. You know what I mean? He watched Dragon Ball Z.
No, you know what's funny? I told you guys this story long time ago, like where I crashed my Jeep. Because I was like headbanging too hard to the song.
No, you didn't. No, tell
you,
us that.
You did not tell this story.
Come on, man! I thought I told the
you
story.
Asshole.
How hard were you headbanging?
It was a band called Soul Embraced, and I think it was called The Hero or something like that. But it had this like it had the sickest breakdown, like, and it was just this head snapping beat, and I had everybody in my band was in the Jeep with me at the time. We're like, and I'm in the parking lot of the dorms, and like I wasn't looking, and then I just like slammed right into like the embankment of all this snow, and like I went off track and like almost rolled it.
You
that's
definitely tell that story.
Yeah,
that's
yeah it was
metal.
I was getting into it.
What was that song, that group that I told you guys and my son showed me, and I was like, made me cry because it was so, it was heavy, and I was like, this is, my son likes this kind of music. Do you guys remember?
It was a new band, right?
Something. It was the last like song on Guitar Hero.
Yeah. What is that? Dragon something.
Dragon Force.
Dragon Force?
Dragon Force.
So I'm in the car, and you know, when you hook up my phone's Bluetooth hooks up to the car, it automatically plays what I was listening to last. Like, it's got this, I don't know if it's a glitch or whatever. And I had just worked out that morning, and I was listening to, I don't know, something crazy like Sepultura or something like that. And so it goes, and it gets on real fast. And so my daughter's like, oh my God, this is crazy. And my son's listening to it, and he's like, whoa. And I'm like, yeah, dude, this is what I work out to. And he's kind of like, do you want to hear what I like? And I'm like, sure. And I'm expecting some, like, you know, pop music, you know, something popular or whatever. Dude, he puts on some speed guitar shit, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it's gnarly. Like, that's the ultimate speed guitar song. Yeah,
I was so happy. I'm like, you like
this? Yeah, just little proud moments.
It's my special boy.
It'd be cool to, like, hook you up and see what's going on neurologically and stuff, like, when music changes in your workout. Wouldn't that be a cool thing to study?
It for sure invokes emotion. Music will make people cry. It makes people pumped up. Music is used in movies. It's used in speeches, political rallies.
If it's good music.
It has to be the right kind, right?
And that's usually my gauge is like, did I feel something? You know? And then you can kind of assess. But yeah, like that's a lost art, man. Like it's hard to find these days.
It's I wonder at what point AI will be able to figure out the right combination sounds and song and stuff to elicit the max emotion out of people. Because at some point, you know, it'll figure it out.
Well, they kind of already do, right? I mean, a lot of the music that's made today is from the unpacking of music before. I mean, that's what the book Hitmakers is all about is, you know, that's why. And I think a lot of musicians and people like Justin who scoff at the music today is that it's a lot of it's manufactured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has been they've hacked into, like, oh, wow, when you do something that has a crescendo, you know, after about a minute and a half into the song, you get this emotional rush. And so they don't even
too predictable.
Right. So they write the song around these parameters versus what happened in the past.
But that's humans doing it at some point. And AI is nowhere near having this ability because creativity requires a computing power that is we have yet to calculate. And this
remember when we were talking with the founder of Brain FM, mm-hmm. you know, and like how he's engineering and crafting all these different songs and like how it emotes mm-hmm. or stimulates certain parts of the brain. Like they're definitely going to be able to figure it out. Like I'm pretty confident.
Dude, speaking of the brain, very awesome article that I had posted this on my Insta story the other day, and it got like 80 or 90 shares, which is not common for an article that you have to read. My memes get shared like crazy. People love sharing stupid jokes, but articles almost never get shared at that rate. But this one did, and I wanted to bring it up because it's a pretty damn good article. So the title of it, it's Scientific American. It was actually published recently. I think it was February 27th, so it's recent. Hmm. And the title of it is Why Do We Crave Sweets When We're Stressed? So this is a real thing. Like when people get really stressed out,
yep.
there's a definite craving for things that taste very sweet.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sort of a coping mechanism.
Well, the old explanation, and I think this is still part of the explanation, is eating foods that taste good give us a nice, you know, a good feeling. And so if you're stressed out, it's almost like a break from your stress because you're eating something that's really palatable. But they're finding that that there's more to it than just that. And so what they found in the study, well, here's a statistic that's interesting. Under acute stress, the brain requires about 12% more energy. Hmm. That's a big amount. I mean, you know the brain, pound for pound, uses more energy than anything else in your body. It's like it just sucks up. Now, if you calculate the computing power of your brain, it's actually remarkably little amount of energy for that. But nonetheless, it's this energy sucker, especially of glucose and glycogen. Mm-hmm. And so they're finding that is probably what's contributing to the craving of sweets. So they did this study where they took 40 people over two sessions. And in one group, they asked the study participants to give a 10-minute speech in front of strangers. In the other session, they were not required to do that. And at the end of the session, they measured the concentration of stress hormone, cortisol, and adrenaline in their blood, and they provided them with a food buffet for an hour. When they gave a speech before the buffet and they were more stressed, they on average consumed an additional 34 grams of carbohydrates than when they did not do the speech. And they think it has to do with this, the brain literally being like, I need more.
Yeah, give me all the resources.
Yes, I want more sugar. I need more of this energy. And in nature, sweet means two different things because, you know, we evolved for the most part without, you know, processed foods or all these clean foods around us. Sweet meant two things. It meant you're going to get easy energy. So sweet in nature is either fruit or honey or something like that. Like, you're going to eat it and you're going to get immediate, you know, glucose. The second thing it meant was it's probably not poisonous. You know, if you eat something in nature and it tastes sweet, it's probably not going to kill you, whereas bitter many times means poison.
So. Well, what a great study to segue into what I wanted to ask you about is you just finished up, and that, maybe it'll be live by this episode, but I know that I just read it on Teamworks, is the latest blog that you just wrote, and I think it's such a great topic, which is that, you know, why is keto making everybody fat? And I think that we are seeing...
It's a bold statement.
It is. It's a very bold statement, but there's some truth to that. And I think we're starting to see the backlash of the 2018 diet of the year, right, that everybody's been talking about like it's revolutionary. And I think we're now starting to see some of the repercussions from that.
I agree. It's you know, what's really irritating about... It's funny. We called this out maybe three or four years ago in the early days of Mind Pump. We talked about how keto was becoming the new kind of fad diet, just like all other, you know, diet trends have started, come and gone. And we called out how we're going to start seeing people saying they're doing keto when they're not. Supplements around keto.
Exogenous ketones are everywhere.
It has become a huge market. If you go to the supplement store, you'll find protein powders, keto protein powder, which I don't know what the fuck that means, because protein technically can be keto unless you eat too much of it. Or keto bars. You know, I had a company recently send me some bar samples.
Keto cookies.
And the bars were, you know, keto bars. Like, they're designed for keto. Keto water, I saw.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
I swear to God.
It's totally keto.
Now, the reason why they said it was keto was because it had exogenous ketones in it. And I'm seeing a lot of exogenous ketone supplements where people are taking these thinking, and they're not in keto, they're eating carbohydrates.
Well, they're eating, so the problem is they're eating and then they're adding these exogenous ketones thinking that it's going to kick them over into ketosis.
No, your body won't go in ketosis.
But that's such a misconception. I see people like touting that all the time, and it frustrates me.
And a lot of people don't know kind of the where keto started. It's funny, I'll get questions on keto on Instagram, and the way people are asking me the questions, it's almost like they think it's a new breakthrough diet. Like, right. Oh, keto, it's this new diet I've never heard about before. Not realizing that a ketogenic diet is one of the oldest diets in existence.
We were probably in ketosis more often than we weren't.
Mm. Right.
I would argue that. I would argue, you know, thousands of years ago, we were probably more keto most of the time than we were not.
Being well fed, but not by
choice.
Right.
Yeah. Not by choice, though. Yeah. You know, this is keto by survival.
Yeah. So, I mean, what happens in the body when you? Well, so let's talk a little bit about the roots first of what the keto diet as we know it. Kind of how it started. You know, originally, a long time ago, I think 500 BC is the first records that we have of people, philosophers, you know, noticing benefits when they would fast or when they would have people fast that came to them for help. And so back in those days, if you had like seizure disorders or neurological disorders, they thought you were possessed. They thought, you know, you were cursed. They didn't know. And fasting at the time was a spiritual practice. Mm. So they noticed that when they fasted, that the gods took away their ailments, and it became this like thing. And so fasting became, now we all know the benefits of fasting. There's a lot of different benefits, but these people who would have these seizures and neurological disorders would have this, many of them would have this great recovery. Their symptoms would go away. And this was observed for a long time. And the problem with fasting is, of course, you're limited. Like, at some point you have to eat again, and you can't treat everybody that way, especially kids. Like, if you have a kid who has neurological disorders, you know, doctors weren't super keen on telling a kid, you know, we're not going to feed you for a week.
Oh, because you need calories. You need calories for developing, you know, everything in the body and the brain. And so, yeah, you need to keep feeding kids, but like, how do we keep and maintain this state of ketosis?
Yeah, and now, here's the way a ketogenic diet works before I continue. How it works is when you eat a diet that is largely devoid of carbohydrates and has a high fat intake, or you fast for a long enough period of time, your body starts to produce what are called ketone bodies that it uses to provide the body with energy. So because you don't have carbohydrates to produce, you know, glycogen, which is your preferred source of energy. Your body then starts to produce ketones off of fats or off of body fat, which you use for energy. And those ketones are burned and used a little bit different than glycogen. And if you're somebody who has certain neurological disorders, for some reason, and we're really learning now kind of how it works, for some reason, it seems to be a cure for some people. And so in the 1920s, that's when doctors developed, they're like, okay, fasting works for seizures for some people and some kids, but it's just not realistic. We need to figure out a way to get those same, you know, same results. And so what they did is they came up with a ketogenic diet, which here's the thing. The real ketogenic diet is not like the ketogenic diet that people do nowadays. Back in the 1920s, and what's still used today is a medical ketogenic diet for neurological issues. It's like
super restrictive.
It's like 80% fat.
Yeah.
You know, it's 70 to 80% fat. It's low to moderate protein. You're not eating high protein.
Barely any protein, really.
And you're eating no carbs. And when I say no carbs, I mean the kids on these diets, especially back then, had to avoid toothpaste for the sugar that may be in it or almost anything.
What was funny about that was I remember when we were going through the process personally of trying it out, and I was just presenting the fact that we were like talking about the ketogenic diet to my wife, who's a nurse, and so her only understanding of the ketogenic diet was from the clinical sense where they would prescribe it to these kids, and it was so restrictive, and she's like, I don't see that working for any like regular person. Like, she was just like questioning me the whole time.
Well, the diets that they would give these kids were lots of full fat creams and butters, and to get their fat intake up high enough for their ketone bodies to get high enough for them to get these whatever benefits. And so that's where keto was around.
Now was
for a long
this
time.
Now this is in the 1920s. Now is this the research that was done then and what we knew about the benefits of it? Is this what really drove what we saw in the late 80s, early 90s, which was the Atkins diet when Dr. Atkins came on the scene and started to promote a really high fat type of a diet, but just a lower carb. Is that where the research originally generated from? Was from here?
Yeah. So you know what? Atkins would have never been as successful as they were, because it was kind of a resurgence of old diets. Because there was keto, low carb, that stuff existed a long time ago. It was some of the first diets that people did. Then we went through the 70s and 80s where we were just inundated with information telling us that fat was bad, and everything was low fat. Everything was low fat. I mean, in the 80s. Fat was evil if you wanted to be healthy, if you wanted to lose
margarine
weight.
Margarine was everywhere.
It was all about low fat. Everything, every food in the market had low fat on it because people didn't want to eat fat because we thought that's what made us fat. And so that happened for a long time, and it kind of set the stage for Atkins.
For a counter message.
Yeah, because then comes out Atkins, and he's like, hey, eat all the fat you want, all the protein you want, just eat no carbohydrates. And you'll lose weight. And so you had all these people who were like, what? I've been not eating fat for the last 10 years. Now I can eat all this fat. And so they started doing it. And of course, lo and behold, people were getting results because they were also restricting calories. And Atkins exploded. But Atkins was much higher protein than the original ketogenic diet. And that's how people do keto now. It's a lot higher protein.
Well, and now, wasn't that the backlash that happened from Atkins? Was I remember they had the original Atkins that exploded. It was like the diet everybody was doing. A couple of years later, we started to get people that had some heart conditions and so that because of the high protein. Is that right?
It was more so going on a high fat diet. There are certain types of people whose lipids will go crazy with a high fat diet, and they have to be careful with saturated fat intake. And it's not a big portion of the population, but you know, if you take 10 people and you put them on a high fat, low carb diet, and it's also higher in saturated fats or animal fats, maybe one out of 10 or something like that will notice like skyrocketing cholesterol and bad lipids. And really the answer to that, if they want to remain low carb, is to change their fatty acid profile. You know, eat more of the avocados, more of the nuts, get off the animal fats or whatever. But that's kind of what was happening. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think the reason why Atkins fell out of favor is the same reason why I think keto is fucking going to do the same thing. It's super restrictive.
Yeah.
There's no way. It doesn't last.
The
no
retention
way.
Just isn't there. You know?
Well, it also got, you know, so the Atkins thing happens. That kind of falls out of favor. This is the 90s. Then we go a little bit further. And what I feel like really the resurgence of it in the last, 5 years for us has been, like, I would say a credit to some of the research that people like Dom DiAgostino, Dr. Mercola has been doing, Walter Longo, these guys, the research that they
Mercola has been talking about keto forever too.
Yeah. I mean, but this is what's really the combination of all these guys. And then I remember the study that Dom talked about with the Navy SEALs, and that actually started to show like the neurological benefits. So not only is this good potential for some people for fat loss and overall health, or maybe even potential autoimmune stuff, but now we're starting to see the benefits on the neurological side.
Yeah, I mean, what his study showed, he was trying to figure out a problem with SEALs where they would use these rebreathers, so it prevents bubbles from coming up when you're underwater. Mm-hmm. But the oxygen content gets so high that these guys would get seizures. And so knowing how ketogenic diet was used to control seizures, he said maybe this will help the SEALs, and sure enough, it did. It dramatically reduced the seizures that they would get and the amount of time they could stay underwater with a rebreather. And so it kind of blew it up a little bit. And Dom himself, brilliant guy, also built as fuck. And he did this whole experiment where he fasted for a long time and then went and deadlifted 500 pounds, something like 10 times. And so then the fitness community was like, huh, let's take
a look here.
Yeah, but I think it's important to say something real quick here. You know, there's only one way your body loses body fat, and that's largely one way, and that's you have to take in less energy than you're burning. That's it. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you eat.
You say that very simple, but there's many things that factor into that, right? Like, so I always like to say, I caution people with that statement, because the average person goes, okay, well, of course, law of thermodynamics, calories in, calories out, I need to eat less or I need to move more. The unfortunate part is there's a large part of the population that just their metabolism isn't in a very good place, that doesn't set them up for success. For example, like the text I read the other day on the podcast where, a client wanting to get ready for a show and she's not even consuming 2,000 calories. And I know that her body fat is probably north of 20% body fat. I know that where she needs to go and where she currently is at, simply just restricting calories or by creating more movement is not a great strategy. This person needs to do some work.
But it's still energy balance, right?
Right.
Whether you boost one, you're burning through faster metabolism or through activity, or you reduce the consumption, you can't get around that fact. And the reason why keto became so popular, in my personal opinion, I think there's two reasons. One, I think people with gut issues oftentimes will benefit from dramatically reducing their carbohydrates, because the carbohydrates feed gut bacteria, or tend to feed gut bacteria in people who have gut issues. So people going keto are like, oh my God, my digestion feels a lot better. Not everybody though, by the way. Some people get constipated as hell and it doesn't work for them. But some people eat keto and they feel better. The other thing is eating a lot of fat and protein can make you not want to eat a lot. And so some people find that it kind of suppresses their appetite a little bit, and it's easier for them to cut calories by eating a ketogenic diet.
Right, you feel full and satisfied, so you're not really motivated as much.
Well, I also think it's important that people that are considering doing that is they really understand who they are and what types of goals they have before even exploring options like this, right? What always happens, and this is what I think the stuff that irritates me with diets like this is, all we need to do is throw some decent science at it. A couple Kardashians talk about it, or somebody fucking famous, and then now everybody's doing it. It's like the bottom line is it's not for everybody, and a lot of times it's probably definitely not for you. And so how do you know that? If you're somebody who's training like a CrossFit, or you're into swimming, or you're somebody that's a long distance runner, or you're just somebody who wants to be healthy and lose body fat and just have a normal life, or you're somebody who loves certain parts of life like going out and having a glass of wine every once in a while with your friends, like, who is this diet for and who is it not?
A keto diet all the time is almost not for anybody. Okay. Yeah. There's a very small percentage of people who should be on a ketogenic diet most of the time. Now, I think everybody should play with this, going low carbohydrate every once in a while, but I don't know very many people that should be keto. We did this a while ago. All of us went on the ketogenic diet ourselves to kind of test it out and talk about the benefits and the drawbacks. Now, I notice I'm always lower carb, not keto, but lower carb. I just feel better that way. Mm. But when I went full keto at the time, I noticed some benefits in terms of my gut health. I noticed I felt like I was more sharp with my thinking. But I also noticed this. my food selection became very narrow. I started eating the same shit every day. It was like bacon, butter, avocado, macadamia nuts, you know, meat, rotate, you know what I mean? Certain greens. And it became, even me, who's
you get
super...
that palate fatigue after a while.
Dude.
The same thing.
Well, not even just palate fatigue. It becomes less likely that you can adhere to it all the
time.
That's right. Well, yeah. I mean, and also, potentially, I don't care if you're following the diet or not, and if you are still in a calorie restriction, you're not going to convince me, I don't care who you are, that eating butter, bacon, avocado for 80% of the food that you're consuming is an ideal source of nutrients. It just isn't. There's so many things that you're potentially lacking in all these other foods. And so, and this is similar to the opposite diet that we talk the same about, which is the vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
right? Very similar. It's like, it's not that there's not all these great health benefits from potentially eating this way. It's that the ability to stick to that. And then also in that little narrow options that you have, also make sure you rotate through all of them, because it's important that you get to each one of those, because they're giving you nutrients that you just couldn't find anywhere else.
There's benefits from diversity, and that's the thing. Like, you're going to now narrow down your macronutrients and eliminate a lot of diversity that you would have been able to incorporate if you're just more flexible and you're able to be on top of it. But there are, like, so what appealed to me about the ketogenic diet was when I fasted the first time, I had a very similar experience to where, like Sal's saying, the sharpness, the mental clarity, I experienced a lot of, a lot less of the indigestion and gut, issues I've had as far as like, heartburn and things like that. So there's benefits to that, that I experienced, but I was also thinking about it. Like, it is a great diet for like overall just brain health and just being able to step away from, just always getting that same source of fuel all the time.
It is, but even Dr. Mercola talked about this. He pointed to studies to show that going keto all the time
but
can actually cause some insulin resistance through that process. And even now he recommends...
like an intermittent version of that.
He does. He recommends that people inject some carbs every once in a while to kind of maintain that.
Yeah, his Fat for Fuel book talks about that. He calls it the fasting mimicking diet, right? Is that what he calls
it? No. That's different. Dr. Vatalongo. Yeah. But no, his Fat for Fuel book does talk about, about doing something like that. And then here's the other thing, too. In the fitness world, what really irritates me, because there's no science to support this, is how keto is better for strength and athletic performance. Now, there's definitely individuals who might benefit from it. Like, if you have terrible gut issues and keto fixes it, or you have neurological issues or autoimmune issues and it helps with that, yeah, you're going to improve your performance. But healthy people, no. Studies show pretty clearly that if you're going to do anything that involves lots of power, strength, glycolytic type of energy, carbohydrates are going to make you perform better. And I noticed this personally myself. I mean, I went keto. I still worked out. I still performed relatively well. When I later on started reintroducing carbohydrates, my strength went up through the roof. I was able to lift more weight and lift harder for longer,
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing, especially powerlifting or deadlifting. Like, it just, for me, it didn't have that same access to that type of like force output. I needed that like real immediate energy source. Yeah. And I get that from carbs.
Well, this is some of the pushback. I remember when we first interviewed Rob Wolf and we kind of dove into a little bit about the paleo diet with CrossFit. And paleo is not even as restrictive as keto is.
Yeah.
Paleo, you can still have sweet potatoes and things like that. You can't have that on a ketogenic diet. And part of the problem with even recommending the paleo diet for CrossFitters is the demand for fast energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the benefits of eating high fat type of diets is the fact that it's slower processing, slower digesting, satiates you. Well, the downfall of that is it doesn't get there fast enough when you need it for those people that are athletes and have that demand.
Interesting, though, talking to Zach Bitter and like a fat adapted athlete that used it for more endurance based types of athletic pursuits.
Now that I could see athletic performance potential benefit. If you're going to do a long duration, steady state, not extreme exertion, but something that requires a long amount of energy, then being keto and fat adapted is probably a good thing, because even a lean athlete is going to store, 10 to 20 times more energy in the form of ketones on their body than they will glycogen that they can store in their liver and in their muscles. And so if you're going to go do a 12-hour hike you're probably, and you're not doing these extreme exertions of energy, you're probably going to perform better, and you're not going to feed yourself, right, during the hike.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to perform better if you're fat adapted. I noticed this. So when I first went keto, Jessica and I did this road trip, and part of our road trip was we were going to kayak across Lake Tahoe to find this camping site. We ended up getting lost, as usual, on Lake Tahoe, and so we fucking kayaked for 7 hours. Fasted, and I was blown away that I was able to. Now
you
we
guys
weren't
didn't kill each other.
Now we weren't sprinting.
That's good.
No, it was early on in our relationship. And we're all, you know, all the butterflies.
Canoodling. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You just don't fight, right?
Yeah.
But right. we were just constantly going, trucking for like 7 hours, and I was shocked that I didn't peter out and need to eat food. So in that case, I could see there being a performance benefit. But if you're trying to like build strength. Or explosiveness, if you're a basketball player, a football player, soccer player, you're going to want carbohydrates. Building muscle is much easier with carbohydrates than not. But I mean, really, this kind of overlooks the big problem that we don't really talk about in fitness. We tend to look at diets and we're like, oh, cool. The studies show that eating this way is going to give you the most protein synthesis. It's going to, you know, give you the best insulin, you know, response, lowers cortisol, it's going to burn body fat the best, completely forgetting the psychology behind nutrition, like completely negating that. Because my big issue with keto, 100%, is that in my experience, and you guys, I'm sure you guys will back me up, the more extreme and dramatic a client makes changes right away to their diet, the more extreme and dramatic the rebound is.
Course.
Every single time.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
It's just a
yep.
massive rebound. And so I think what's happening now, and I can say this with full confidence, I personally think the ketogenic diet today at large has probably caused more people to gain weight than it has to help people lose weight in a permanent fashion.
Well, I've seen it. You know, I've seen it with clients. I've seen it with peers. You know, there's what's happening is, and this is the part that I think happens. Almost everybody that has now been in either the health and fitness space or pays attention to the fitness industry at all has heard of the ketogenic diet. And it's now ranked as the number one diet of the year. So it's the most popular that everyone's the buzzer. Mm-hmm. I go get my hair cut at the hair salon and I hear the ladies talking about, oh, I'm on the ketogenic
diet. Bro, we can expect like 10% more downloads because keto will be in the title of this episode.
Right, right. Yeah. It's definitely the most popular thing going around right now. But nobody stops to think like, okay, how many other diets have I tried that I didn't stick to long term, and what potentially happens when I don't stick to this diet? And that's why this one, I agree with you, Sal, is causing more harm than good, because here's what happens is you become fat adaptive, you get used to the training or eating this way for a long enough period of time, so maybe you stick to it for 3 weeks or 6 weeks or however long your discipline is, and then finally you have this wedding or whatever reason that makes you break it, mm-hmm. and then you drink and eat and you just say, fuck it, I fell off keto. And what happens is your body is not used to intaking that much carbohydrates like it used to be, and you can no longer get away with the same amount of carbs and intake and calorie intake that you were able to get away with 6 months before you ever did this keto diet. So that's the real danger is, and this is something I remember noticing when I went through this. So the positive things I noticed was before I ever did the ketogenic diet, I was able to eat 600 grams of carbs a day. And I remember telling you guys on the podcast 3 years ago, why would I ever fucking go ketogenic if I get to eat all these carbs and enjoy all these foods and I can stay in great shape? And instead went ahead and did the diet to see how I went through, and so I could talk about it. And you know, some of the things that I found really fascinating. Like you, I had definitely had mental clarity. I noticed that the biggest thing out of all the things that I could say that were positive for me was how satiated I was. I went from being the guy that had to carry his meals around everywhere, not because I felt like that I needed to do that for any other reason than I wanted to eat every 2 to 3 hours because I was always hungry because I had a very high carb diet and it promoted me being hungry. Mm-hmm. And then here I would all of a sudden eat this, you know, whole egg, bacon type of a breakfast, and man, I would feel good all the way till 2 o'clock in the afternoon before I'd even feel like I was hungry. So there was definitely some benefits that I got from it. Now the problem was after months of doing it, I found myself in the same place as you, Sal, only I was trying to consume 4,000 calories. Like, try and get 4,000 calories on the ketogenic diet. Like, show me somebody that can do that with balance, with, like, being able to spread that out over foods and rotate that.
Even your vegetables are limited on keto.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so hard. It was so hard to do that. And then once you finally do it, so because I'm trying to fit this macro profile, like my targets, and I figured out, it's like, I don't want to deviate from that, because it's like, I found out that, okay, 4 handfuls of macadamia nuts, 6 pieces of bacon, 8 eggs in the day, 1 tri-tip steak. Like, I figured out the formula. Okay, I'm perfectly in keto. I'm at where my calories need to be. I'm at where my protein is. And it's so hard to get back to that target without eating those exact same foods that I found this cycle. And then eventually, I come out of it. And when I came out of it, the thing that blew my mind, and thank God that I had stuck with it long enough, and I think I'm aware enough and paying attention to signals my body. I mean, I would get sick if I ate more than 300 grams.
Did you find that once you started eating carbs, it was like you couldn't stop?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the Jersey Shore, the newer season of Jersey Shore, and then what's his name is on there? They call him the Keto Guido. Vinny.
Vinny.
Right? Love Vinny, right? But he's ketogenic. So throughout the whole series, you know, they'll order pizza at night after they've gone out drinking, and he'll take his slice and he'll peel the cheese off and just eat the cheese. And you watch him do this, and they tease him about it, right? They call him the Keto Guido because he will not eat carbohydrates.
But he was drinking.
Well, one episode, he said, fuck it, I'm going to have some carbs. And then he went nuts. He went nuts and ate, I don't know, how many bags of French fries and cheeseburgers and pizza slices and whatever, and made himself sick. And it's that binge effect that you get from restricting too much. And this is a psychological effect. Now, there may be some physiological reasons for this, like Adam had described, but I think it's much more psychological, where when you're on a keto diet, you are literally conscious of the fact that you cannot eat a single, like you cannot eat carbs, which eliminates an entire segment of food. And by the way, carbohydrates are not evil. There are some very healthy forms of carbohydrates. Humans have been eating carbohydrates as long as we've been on Earth, and we've been eating grains for at least 10,000 years. And sure, there's people who make the arguments against grains, but the reality is there are societies that eat rice and certain, you know, heirloom types of wheat or whatever, and they live a long time, longer than other societies. So you can eat carbohydrates and be very, very healthy. And so now here you are, you're conscious of the fact that you can't eat any carbs. You go out with your friends, you're throughout the whole day, but you're super strict. I'm going to do this, and I'm losing weight, and it's helping me, and I'm losing weight. You're 6 months into it, 7 months, 8 months into it. I've known people to stick to keto for a year or 2 years. And then at some point, you cannot restrict yourself anymore. At some point, the game that you play where you're the prison warden and you are also the prisoner, where you're telling yourself, nah, you can't do this, don't do this. And then you're like, but I want to. No, don't do it. At some point, the prisoner escapes the prison. Always. Every single time, the prisoner escapes. And what ends up happening is not a normal approach to carbohydrates. It is a binge effect, which is literally a swinging back of the pendulum of all the time that you were restricted yourself. It's almost as if that restriction built up a bunch of energy in your body. And when you go back, it's like you're going through all that shit. It reminds me of those kids that had super strict households growing up. Their parents didn't let them go out, let them do anything. They couldn't drink. They couldn't do anything. They go off to college and they fucking lose their mind. Those are the kids that binge drink, you know, do drugs, have sex STDs with everybody.
Yeah.
They go nuts.
All that stuff.
Because they just, they rebound. And this is true for anything, by the way. I don't care what it is. If I have a client who's coming to me and saying, hey, I need to lose 30 pounds, and they take this fucking, I'm going to go crazy approach and cut out an entire macronutrient, for example, like you do with keto, I can predict with almost 100% certainty the rebound is going to be extreme. It's going to be just as extreme as a restriction. And so what I see that's happening now is people go keto, they lose weight for partially because they may be choosing better foods, partially because it may be killing their appetite, so they're not eating as much, partially because maybe they're now finally counting, but they think it's the keto, whatever, counting, you know, calories and macros. But and they lose weight.
Listen,
but I see every single one of them gain the weight back.
If you don't have to do it for medical purposes, I really believe you shouldn't be doing it. If you don't need to do it for medical purposes, I don't think you should be doing it. Because if you're somebody who's doing it because you think for all the health reasons, There's a lot you can get that through fasting, and you can get that through intermittently doing this stuff. You can get that through doing a fasting mimicking diet, like I was talking about, where that's like a really low calorie diet for like 7 days. You can take the principles and the thing that they use, they attach all the science to support the diet and to get everybody to get behind it and follow this structure thing. You could take those tools and you can put that into a normal diet that you eat that's balanced, right? So you have a very balanced, normal way of eating. And then you have occasional 3 or 4 days where you decide, hey, I'm going to reduce my carbohydrates significantly for 3 days, and then I'm going to reintroduce them back in.
That's how I coach people.
Yeah.
Right. The way I coach people is they'll have days that are very low carbohydrate, higher fat, other days that are higher carb, lower fat, some days that are lower protein, some days that are lower calorie, because that more closely mimics everyday normal life. But it also prevents that binge effect that comes from.
Right.
Now, all diets, I mean, to be honest, all diets, anytime you're trying to lose body fat, some restriction is involved. But if we push it too hard, and especially if we push it too hard too fast, I promise you, you will at some point go back. And now we have studies to show that when you go restrict, 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 low calorie, low calorie, low calorie, and then you binge, your body attempts to increase its ability or improve its ability to capture energy. And the way it
adds fat cells.
It actually adds the number of fat cells.
And they don't go away every time you cut back. That's what people don't understand.
No, like, this is why I think, and we've observed this now for decades. You look at bodybuilders who compete, and the way they compete is they get shredded and then they just get hella fat off season, and they do this over and over again. You ever notice each time they compete how less sharp they become?
Yes.
How much more difficult it is? I think it's that effect, that they restrict so much, then they go to feed themselves. And what your body does when you eat excessive calories is your fat cells get bigger because it's capturing that energy. Hmm. Well, if your body sees this all of a sudden dramatic reversal of calorie intake, it tries to improve its ability to capture that energy for the future, especially if you do it over and over again, which a lot of people do with diets. And so you add fat cells and you're setting yourself up.
It's an evolutionary advantage.
Yep.
I mean, in states of extreme famine, what do you think the body wants to do? It wants to store energy. So it's like you're fighting these like natural mechanisms that we have by going super extreme and then coming back. It's like that's what your body's supposed to do.
Yeah, I think, I can say with full confidence, I think keto is contributing to the problem like all
of
other
course,
diets.
Of course, we're going to see a backlash.
Yeah.
We 100% will see a backlash just like we did with Atkins. You're going to see the same thing happen again where eventually people will start to piece. Enough people will have done it and talked great things about it, then came off it, and then realized what happened to them on the rebound effect, that there'll be more of those people than the people that are chanting and saying it's great. Because here, by no means, and I think this is important, we've said it multiple times, is there's definitely an application for this for certain people that need to.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and it's a health condition for you, and then you by doing this, it makes your makes you healthier and a better person.
That's the best diet for you.
That's absolutely it is. But that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing the masses are following this diet and really have no business doing it. And even if you have business doing, to each their own that want to try it, aren't aware of the potential shit that could come, the shit storm that could happen, you know, after they fall off of it. And that's what you got to be careful of.
Yeah. And my, it's funny because it's like I kept getting these signs as keto got more popular, is it got sold so hard by the fitness industry that I would get messages like this. No joke. I must have had, I still get them every once in a while, but you know, before I used to get them all the time, people would be like, hey, I'm doing keto. You know, I eat less than 20 grams of carbs a day. I'm eating high fat, but I feel terrible. You know, how long is this keto flu going to last? And I'd be like, oh, well, you know, how long have you been doing keto? 3 months. Yeah, go off the fucking diet, dude. Like you feel like shit after 3 months. It's not working for you. Or I have people tell me like, yeah, I do keto, but I get constipated and I only go to the bathroom once every 4 days. Okay, time to go off keto. It's not working for you. But they got sold so hard that it was this magic diet.
Or just even simpler than that. People will message me and they'll be asking like, oh, I'm really struggling hitting this target. I'm really struggling doing this. It's like you're struggling so hard to adhere to a diet when you're missing the whole purpose of this. It needs to be something that you can integrate into your life for the rest of your life. So if you're having problems following it, then it probably is definitely not the diet for you.
Let me put it to you this way in a different analogy. Let's imagine for a second that waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and swimming in a cold lake, okay, I'm going to make it very specific, was by far the most effective way you could burn body fat and build muscle. It was 20% better than the next best program, okay? Now think about yourself. What is the likelihood that you're going to do that program? 0%. So that program for you becomes not 20% better than the next best program. It becomes the least effective program because you're not going to wake up at 3 a.m. You're not going to go fucking swim in a cold lake. So what you need to consider for yourself when you're looking at diet is consider reality. Is this something that I'm going to want to do forever?
Yes, it's sustainable.
Is this going to work with my lifestyle? Is this going to work with the context of my lifestyle, the people that I hang out with? What are the foods I enjoy eating? And if it's a no on all that stuff, I don't care how effective you think it is, it's just not going to work for you. It's not the diet for you. That's just the bottom line at the end of the day. Right. So, and with that, look, go to mindpumpfree.com and download some of our guides for free. Actually, you can download all of them for free. We have a lot on there. Also, if you want to find us on social media, we all have our own social media pages on Instagram. You can find Justin at mindpumpjustin. You can find Sal at mindpumpsal. And you can find Adam at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.